This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
AM radio, and also a couple of other interesting stories post-COVID that we're going to get to. And also, we have to get to this study on the male brain that randomly decides to shrivel up at a certain point each day. And I can verify this.
Shrivel up, though.
What shrivels
shrivel up? The man's brain.
I was like half listening, and then, what?
Shrivel up. There you go.
I know, Greg. Yep. Greg knows me too well. What?
Hey, not my story. I didn't find it. Greg did, but yeah. I think it's a good one. We got to talk about this because I can confirm this. All right, we'll get the cut sheet coming up at 7:45 as well. But let's get to the news round number two here at 7:03. The great Dawn Stensland.
And good morning, Kale and Company News Live this Tuesday, September 24th. We're at 61 degrees and cloudy this morning, and we are sponsored in Kale and Company News Live by Indeed. In the news, I'll begin with a follow-up story, and this is something we talked about yesterday as far as what happened across the streets of Philadelphia. Philadelphia police now say that investigators are now actively searching for those people, and we heard about hundreds who carried out a series of car meetups across the city over the weekend, injuring officers, damaging marked patrol vehicles, and wreaking havoc, essentially, across the city. So hundreds of these individuals face criminal charges, a $2,000 fine, and their vehicles will be confiscated. That's the latest from police. What's interesting here, and even Elon Musk had retweeted some of these videos that we showed you yesterday here in Kale and Company, and that was that many were dressed in these banana suits. They wore Donald Trump masks, green alien costumes, and all these people descending on Philadelphia. And they called the Night of Mayhem, dubbed Project X online, that resulted in police officers being surrounded. And as I say, in many cases, their cars, their vehicles were attacked. People jumped on the marked patrol cars, smashing in windshields and windows. So law enforcement saying that the meetups, including people drag racing, doing donuts, exploding fireworks. We talked yesterday about that weird ring of fire just outside City Hall and cars spinning around there. But these spanned from the Northeast to Southwest, and as I say, right outside City Hall. And so talking points as we think about what was going on here and why did they call it Project X?
I was just going to ask, was this something that was emanated and created via X on social media, as in the platform X?
The Philadelphia Inquirer is also writing about this morning, and they're noting that it's becoming a talking point for Republicans, talking about lawlessness and crime in blue cities.
Yeah.
So the House Judiciary Committee posted on X, "You're not safe in Democrat-run Philadelphia." And Elon Musk had shared some of the video saying it resembled a scene from The Joker.
Yep, it did. That's what I said yesterday. Yeah, the end scene with yep. Joaquin Phoenix when all hell's breaking loose, people are, you know, rioting on top of cop cars. I don't know if she has given a statement, but I'm glad you bring up X. And as you were talking about that, I brought up Sherelle Parker's Twitter page. So 3 days ago, Sherelle Parker tweeted about the global stage for monumental events in the city in 2026 and how Philadelphia Airport is blah, 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 blah. 8 hours ago, she tweeted congrats to our Phillies. So just on X alone, zero comment from the mayor. Zero. And she that was part of her platform, right? We're gonna get the law and order back, and she didn't say law and order specifically, but she, you know, this is not going to be, you know, and everyone, you know, try to, you know, even Republicans were like, oh, okay, we know we're not going to get a Republican mayor, so, you know, well, this is the best of the bunch. Where's the mayor at?
I will say that the deputy commissioners were out there over the weekend, and they were quoting mayor. They were saying, we're in constant communication with Mayor Sherelle Parker. She will not tolerate, and we will not tolerate. So I will say that she was delegating to the police. They were quoting her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and we play at some point yesterday, we played that audio, maybe in the 11 o'clock hour. I forget, but at some point we did play that,
but she hasn't publicly come out.
She
spoken.
Personally, right. I can't find audio. Yeah. If she personally has responded to that,
in my opinion, and I know you and Dom talk far more ultra uber local stuff, that's unacceptable from the mayor. What is she studying for the debate too? It's ridiculous.
No, I mean,
she's not getting the benefit of the doubt from me, Dawn.
I will.
Like, enough. The honeymoon's over. Let's go, woman.
Well, I think that the question of the honeymoon, I think, is with the Chinatown Sixers arena. I think that's the next big argument. I think that's what she's focused on. But I will say she sent out her, you know, the police were quoting statements from her and said that they were actively working. I'm just telling you.
I'm not getting mad at you. I just like this. Like, you have to give me more than that, Sherelle Parker. Like, hey, I don't talk about Sherelle Parker a ton on this show because I don't think my audience really cares about what's going on in a city that's 7-1 Democrat where, you know, we're all disenfranchised because we know a Republican mayor can't win. But like, she's got to do more. I mean, I got her tweeting about the Phillies. Like, you weren't elected to be the rah-rah. You're not the Philly fanatic. Clean your streets up. Gosh.
We've talked about earlier in Kale and Company the headline that we have two young men, one 18, one in his early 20s, in critical condition this morning after that double shooting in West Philadelphia. No arrests, no suspects. We don't have all the details yet watching that one. And as well, we have a 16-year-old boy who was found shot to death. And this was outside one of our Philadelphia high schools. This is Martin Luther King High School. And so that one as well has Philadelphia police investigating with this teenager shot right outside of the city high school. Just a horrible discovery. And I will point out to you, it happened late Sunday night, overnight Sunday night into Monday morning. But police did give us an update yesterday afternoon that the individual who was originally reported as a young man in his 20s or 30s was actually just a 16-year-old boy. He's being identified as William Honesty, and he's from the West Oak Lane neighborhood. So first responders, you know, finding him bleeding on the lawn there. At least three shots had been fired. So that's under investigation when you talk about the shootings, the lawlessness.
Awful.
And, you know, it's just, again, for Philadelphia, as we think about back to school, we also talked about the investigation that's happening on the main line. And this after word of a student at St. Joseph's University there. And this, by the way, clogged up traffic last night right after sundown for hours. And this was, we don't know the situation. This was a motorist who struck and critically injured a St. Joseph's University student right there on City Ave. So we're following that for you. We talked about October 5th, the big rally announcement. Donald J. Trump saying that I will be going back to Butler, Pennsylvania for a big, beautiful rally honoring the soul of our beloved firefighting hero, Corey, and those brave patriots injured. And what a day it'll be. So fulfilling that promise, as we now know that rally is Saturday, October 5th. Melania Trump announcing her first interview of the 2024 election cycle. So the former first lady will sit down for her first interview, and that will be with Fox News' Ainsley Earhart. And it will be, that will air, I believe, this coming up Thursday.
You know what they really should do? And it's cool to see that, but I would actually make it from an interview to a press conference and let people gather, and then Trump can come out and say, even my wife, Melania, has done a press conference before my opponent, Kamala Harris. That would be epic. Just let Melania up there for a half hour and let the media just keep peppering her with questions, unscripted, and let her dunk on Kamala and show that she's more competent to answer questions where she doesn't have a chance to study the answer for 5 days.
Well, Kamala Harris will be back here in Pennsylvania, I believe, tomorrow. And we know that Trump had two different locations in Pennsylvania. Just yesterday, J.D. Vance was here over the weekend, just to let you know where the candidates are. UN session convening today, last address of Joe Biden to that. And that's why Zelensky was here yesterday. Other headlines for you as we look at what's happening across the area. And yes, Aramark workers in the union there still out on the picket lines and still striking day two. And that really brings us to Citizens Bank Park, where our Philadelphia Phillies, for the first time in 13 years, clinching the National League East crown last night, first division title in 13 years. So beating the Cubs 6-2, needing to win tonight to earn that bye week, as Greg Stocker said earlier this morning. So 6:40 p.m.
6:40 first pitch. And they're, so obviously it's clinched, but I think the Braves are still playing for that last wild card or like a game back. So I'm going to try to pay attention to that a little bit, because we could end up with three teams from the NL East in the playoffs.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. I don't know if it's good or bad. I just, you know, seeing all these teams from our own division, it's familiarity. So that I think that's an advantage for the Phils. You never want to play one of these teams that you don't have a ton of familiarity with, and all of a sudden they get hot and your bats go cold. That's the thing about playoff baseball. Like, you can have like a 5-day stretch in the regular season where you can't hit a ball and it's no big deal because it's 162 games. You go cold in a 5-game series or whatever the series is, the whole thing's over just like that. That's the scary part. I need Schwarber to keep raking.
So we have today our high 71 degrees. And mostly cloudy today, so maybe grab a jacket if you're lucky enough to be headed to Citizens Bank Park this evening for that 6:40 first pitch. And then tomorrow, much needed rain, 70 degrees, cloudy, a rainy day, hopefully more than we got yesterday, which was just enough to cover the ground, basically. But we really need this rain. So tomorrow we will get the rain midweek. And then for your Thursday, we really warm back up. We get out of the low 70s, popping back up with a lot of sunshine, and then Thursday we'll go to 80 degrees, Friday 77, and then for a beautiful weekend, Saturday and Sunday, sunny 75 degrees, just a gorgeous weekend ahead. So love this forecast this week. It's sponsored by Indeed. Need to hire? You need Indeed, their end-to-end solution, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all year round. Schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from your Indeed dashboard. Learn more by visiting Indeed.com/credit. Kale and Company News Live.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much. 855-839-1210. So let's get to Tim Walz. A very interesting story in Politico from his appearance this past weekend in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I was watching some of the football games. I think it was on Saturday, and then I started seeing Tim Walz pop up in Bethlehem on my Twitter timeline, and I'm thinking, all right, just when I don't want to look at politics for a day, they're right in my old backyard. I got family up there, the whole bit. And Politico wrote this column saying, the headline being, Tim Walz tests the limits of his working class appeal in Pennsylvania's ultimate swing county. And they write the following. Democrats see major opportunities to boost turnout in Northampton County. It's also a microcosm of the challenges that Harris and Walz face nationally with working class men. Northampton County in eastern Pennsylvania is one of the most important and hotly contested swing counties in the country. Which, if you don't know Northampton County, it's Easton, it's Bethlehem, and then some rural areas like Stockertown, no relation to Greg
Stockertown.
Yeah. And you kind of head up like Route 611 and up Route 33 well before you get to Stroudsburg or the Poconos. That's kind of the area if you don't know what it's about. And they write the following, that Democrats in one of the most important swing counties in the U.S. were eager to fire Tim Walz up to the party faithful during his Saturday visit. They were also hoping that he would pull in some of the still skeptical working class voters for Kamala Harris and how she needs to woo them to clinch the must-win state. But even, according to Politico, the gun-owning, car-fixing Midwestern dad is facing skeptics of his own in his former steel town. On Saturday, the campaign dispatched him to Northampton County in Bethlehem, PA, about 80,000 people in the Lehigh Valley that reside there, where voters are pretty much down the middle. It's kind of a centrist type area, a little bit of moderate Democrat, a little bit of moderate Republican. Certainly you have the fringes as well. And this is a county that Joe Biden won by less than a percentage point just 4 years ago. Trump took it in 16 and Obama took it twice. So they were at the Freedom High School gym, which I know exactly where that's at. Walz is speaking there on Saturday before lunch, and he's trying to appeal to the younger working class man. So according to Politico, they spoke with a few people. One individual was walking his dog across the town in Bethlehem. His name is AJ Jansen. He's a 47-year-old self-described liberal independent who supported Bernie Sanders in the past Democratic primaries. He's the kind of Democrat inclined voter that would lean towards Harris that Walz is trying to woo. But Jansen, who works for the city, is not planning to vote. And Walz's visit this past weekend didn't give him any second thoughts about the plan, saying, "I don't support either one of them," Johnson said of Harris and Trump. Then you have an individual who's a youngster, Eli Lavelle, 22, who works in inventory and receiving at a shipping company in Easton, Pennsylvania, a city of 30,000 just northeast of Bethlehem. He doesn't like Trump, but he's not enthused about Harris either, saying, quote, "I probably won't be there. He does not plan to vote, and Walz coming to the area did not sway him." Former GOP Rep. Charlie Dent saying, "I'm not big on making predictions, but I will make this prediction. Whichever candidate wins Northampton County will win Pennsylvania and the White House." So after reading this, there's two takeaways I have knowing Northampton County, having lived there for 34 years of my life. Do I think Kamala Harris gets the centrist moderate female in Northampton County? Yeah, until the cows come home in spades, in droves. But as far as the working class man in Northampton County, which a lot of my buddies' fathers would qualify are city employees that, you know, pave roads like that, I don't believe that. And I think Northampton County might actually be an indicator of any of these centrist swing counties in any battleground state. We go back to the cut sheet yesterday, Tim Walz. I mean, he goes from trying to hook up cruise control in a car that's 45 years old to then pivoting to Project 45, right? Like, nobody talks about that. No, there's not a person alive today who's working on their car, lifts their head out from underneath their hood and says, "So how about Project 45? How about Project 25? How about Project 36? It's not happening. So I really don't believe that Tim Walz brings what Kamala Harris was hoping that he would bring. And I think, and you can say, well, it's only two quotes from Northampton County. I get that. Very small sample size. I don't think he's going to win that group over. I think working class men, and I think the polls have shown us this, favor Trump. Trump is, which is goes to show you about these party realignment stats we've looked at. Like, Democrats are the party of liberal women, coastal elites, and well-educated Ivy Leaguers. Working-class dudes that get their hands greasy each day and have calluses, I don't think they're voting for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I just don't think that that county that you and I grew up in is the same county that we grew up in. I think it's been...
Because of the closure of Bethlehem Steel in 2003?
No, I think that it is... there's an influx of...
New York.
Of New York, yep. And Philadelphia.
Yep.
And because it's a great place to live where you can get houses with land and property cheaper.
Yeah.
And it's the 70-mile commute to both Philly and New York. So I think that it is. I think there's a lot of people that have come into that county that didn't grow up there like we did.
Yeah,
we left.
Right.
So I think that
and for good reason.
There's more to that than people think. And I do. Well, I do agree because in 16 that county went for Trump, and in 20 it went for Biden. So I do agree that it is it's like one of the ultimate swing counties in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
It usually does determine which way the state goes. I just think that it right now it's a crapshoot because you don't know how many, especially after the pandemic, how many people
left yeah.
New York, Philadelphia, relocated to places like that and, you know, brought their ideals with them.
Well, and that's the thing. I'm not saying that Kamala Harris can't win Northampton County. She'll win it, though, I think, in spite of Tim Walz, because of what you're talking about, people moving into that area. And because of single liberal women. I don't think she will win Northampton County because Tim Walz went to Freedom High School in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I don't think any of that stuff matters. I think they spend a lot of time, both campaigns, you know, Trump was in Western PA, both campaigns spent a lot of time in Pennsylvania and for good reason. At the end of the day, I don't know if that matters all that much.
I mean, I think you can easily argue the case that right now, when you're looking at certain segments of society and who's doing a better job of growing, you know, what used to be their vulnerability, and I know you cited some number yesterday that said Trump was only at 7% with the black vote, which
that was according to an NBC poll.
That's not my reporting.
That's an NBC poll.
Yeah, no, I'm saying you were citing a poll.
Yeah,
yeah. So I don't believe there's any way he gets 7%. I would argue that Trump has done better in the last, I don't know, you want to call it 2 years, 3 years, whenever he came back out and said he was going to try to get back into the White House, I think he's done a better job of growing the Hispanic and black vote than Tim. Now, granted, the time is a major time difference here. Tim Walz has been on the campaign trail for, you know, 6 weeks. I don't think Tim Walz is bringing in what is the vulnerability of the Harris campaign and making that less of a vulnerability.
I'm just looking at the census, the populations of Lehigh County, which Bethlehem straddles both Lehigh and Northampton.
Yep.
I mean, their population gain is maybe like 13,000 people
since the last census.
So I don't know. It's not a huge shift. Will 13,000 people change it? I don't know.
But that's Lehigh County. It's not Northampton County, right?
No, Northampton County. So
it was only 13,000.
So it's Northampton County in 2016 had about 303,000. That was 2016. So they went up a few thousand, and now it's up. So yeah, it's like 13,000 to 15,000 people, depending on which model you look at. It's not a huge number of population growth, unless a lot of people left. But to your point, I think more people have probably moved from New York to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk to people, even though you're saying this about Northampton and Lehigh County, believe it or not, our affordability for renters in the city of Philadelphia is better from people that I talk to in these outlying counties. Believe it or not, because of the availability, our rents are cheaper from friends from New York who are looking.
Mm-hmm.
Our rents are cheaper here in the city of Philadelphia, believe it or not, than some of these outlying areas. That's different from home ownership that Greg's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I don't know, how much will 13,000 people or 15,000, is that going to sway the, I know these elections are close, but is that really going to sway it that much? I don't know.
I'm having flashbacks to that whole double hater concept that we were talking about when Joe was still atop the ticket in the race. Just based off of just these two quotes, I get it, it's one column. But and I kind of alluded to this yesterday with, you know, are people getting, you know, Harris-Trump fatigue like they had Biden-Trump fatigue? I think the answer is yes. And based on the fact that two independent liberal-leaning Democrats have both said they're sitting it out and Tim Walz coming here doesn't change that, makes me think that there's still the double hater, you know, concept in play for this election. Because, again, if those are the people that are actually paying attention to these things, they know Kamala Harris is nothing new. She's part of the Biden campaign.
Both sides, though. There are also Republicans who won't vote for Trump.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kamala Harris.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. I do. Look, is there as many as there was when it was Biden and Trump? I don't think so. But I think there still is going to be that contingent of people mm-hmm. who just won't vote or won't vote for mm-hmm. that ticket.
These counties, at the top of the ticket, but they'll still vote.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe.
These counties are going to be very, very interesting to track. Northampton, obviously, for what we just said. We talked about Bucks County, obviously, our listening audience. Also, yesterday, I believe Pressler was able to, at least from a registration standpoint, officially flip Luzerne County as far as more registered Republicans than Democrats for the first time since, you know, whenever. I don't know if it was 2020 or 2016, but those numbers have been flipped according, you know, to what he said based on being on the ground for 10 hours. 855-839-1210. Do we have time for...
Yes, yes.
Let me grab Mike in Flemington because he has some thoughts on Bethlehem and Easton with Northampton County. Mike, you go right ahead, pal.
Yeah, I just want to make the case that the winning argument in those areas is not to saying we don't follow Project 2025. It's to sit there, go up, and say this is the Kamala Harris-Waltz agenda, which is gender transition training K through 8th grade, which is if you don't volunteer to put your kid through gender transition, we'll take your kid. It's those types of arguments that's going to win those counties because that's what we're concerned with. And the problem is that they're saying what Trump's agenda is, Project 2025. We should be sitting there saying this is their agenda. Their agenda is all based on gender ideology, and that's what we have to fight and say, I believe.
Mike, here's the thing. I'd like to agree with you, but I'm going to cite Bucks County because you're bringing up kind of the topic of the culture wars within the schools. If you go back 3 years ago, Republicans were winning on the culture wars. But if you go back in the last year to 2 years, especially with some of these school board elections, and I know that's like at a super grassroots level, Republicans have lost the culture wars. I've had this conversation with Charles McElwee, who's the editor for Real Clear Politics PA and Athens-Coutts-Columbus. Like, that was, I think, a one-off, especially with what DeSantis was able to do in Florida. If you look around the country right now, I would argue that Republicans no longer have that juice in the culture wars as far as the results. It doesn't mean we don't want that. We do. But I think I don't know that that's a deciding factor. I think that's much further down the list. Like, I would just argue about the economy in Northampton County. Like, to me, I'm the, you know, economy, it's crime. It's the major bullet points, not the school culture wars, which I love talking about as a father. Dawn, you're the same way. You talk to these suburban moms. But I don't know that when you're looking at coin flip races and bellwethers, I don't know that's the deciding victory hand for the Republicans. I'd like to think it is, and it should be. But if you look recently, what did we go through? Montgomery County, we went through Bucks County when we talked about these school board races. And Republicans lost. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like the steam has kind of left that sail a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that as far as, you know, today is National Book Ban Day. This is from the Library Association, the Librarians Union. They're calling it National Book Ban Day.
Oh, jeez.
And that's just, it's being carried by the media, the mm-hmm. so-called mainstream media, which mm-hmm. is not mainstream or just independent.
Yep.
And so that's just it, that even parents locally who just said, hey, we don't want anybody bullied, but we don't. And recently there was a case brought in Liberty. I think Beth Ann Rossica wrote about it, that they recently in a local school district had a book that appeared in a library and had some really graphic stuff for little kids. And they all just got together and decided, yeah, that's not appropriate in the library. And it was really nice. It was just nice. Mm-hmm. And it was common sense.
Yep.
And that's what we need.
Yep, I agree. 855-839-1210. Cut sheet in under 20 minutes as we continue. Kale and Company back after this.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Let me grab Frank. He's in Burlington. He's got some thoughts. Frank, good morning. You're on Talk Radio 1210.
Hey, Nick. I kind of disagree with you just in terms of what the average voter thinks is important and that, you know, cultural issues really aren't at the top of the agenda. I really think it's just because, me and you and everybody else that listen to you, we're in a really good informational bubble. Yep. We know what's going on. If you ask the average parent, seriously, in any school, mm-hmm. about the revisions to Title IX, you would get a blank stare from 60% of them.
I just think
they don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they did know, you're talking about their children.
Yep.
The children are even more important than the economy, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And I think if they really knew what was happening in the schools as far as the indoctrination and the literature and, you know, what's being pushed and the confusion that's being put in these poor kids' heads, I think it would be a much, much bigger issue. But we have a media, you know, let's be honest, if we don't listen to certain stations, I didn't listen to you.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have so much more informational input than they do, and than most people do.
Yeah, yeah. So Frank, I agree. No, I agree with you. I actually think you're right when you think about this. I think COVID and having our kids home during the pandemic and doing virtual was kind of a wake-up call where parents started to figure it out and say, oh, what is this? I didn't know this was being taught. But to your point, you're saying 60%. You're probably right. There's 35-40% that now realize what's going on, whether they listen to us or not, but they're now aware of it by seeing the work that is in front of their kid's computer or on a packet or in their folder. But there's still, to your point, there's probably two-thirds of society. You're right. You bring up Title IX, and they just look at you, and they don't have a clue what that's even about.
No.
Yep. All right,
well,
Frank.
Thanks, well, Nick.
Yeah, man. Thank you. And a very valid point. I mean, Dawn, I'm sure you can comment on this. Like, you know, you're around all of these parents. Like, I'm kind of new to the whole parenting thing again, as far as being around parents with my girls at a new school. And, you know, we did this whole meet and greet thing this past Friday. I met a bunch of parents. But, you know, I'm not going to bring these things up randomly to parents I don't know. But I am curious to know, like, how many of them are aware. And honestly, sadly, it might actually not even fall on, like, who listens to this type of radio, but what side of the political aisle you're on. Like, if you're a Republican, you might be aware of this. If you're a Democrat, you might be oblivious to it because you think it's just standard protocol.
Yeah.
That could be the case. I mean, I'm not really sure.
As far as I've looked up the top, there's a brand new poll just out, Mass Inc., and it's partnering with Spotlight PA. So 69%, these are Pennsylvanians, brand new poll out. It says jobs, wages, and the economy, by far the number one issue, with nearly 70% of Pennsylvanians saying that's their number one issue. The number two at 60%, the future of democracy in America. That's number two.
Oh,
immigration policy at 57% is number a close number three.
Okay.
And then gun policy, 51%. When you fall into the 49% category, there is abortion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So those are the top ones. Climate change way down is down at 35%. By the way, issues of race closer to the bottom, 23%.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security and Medicare somewhere in between. But the number one by far, the number one issue, nearly 70%, jobs, wages, and the economy.
Anything there with education or schools or anything of that, you know, that topic?
I don't think they ask necessarily,
okay,
which is weird that they put the future of democracy in America, and that kind of tells you the slant of the poll.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see what is the wording of the question. That's something we talk about all the time.
Right.
But I don't see, to your point, and they also have U.S. Supreme Court 42%. You can see the slant of the poll by even their topics.
Right.
I don't see education. Isn't that weird? Education, you would think, is up there.
Yep.
Not even on here.
Yep. Sadly, it might be very, very niche, even though I think Frank's onto something for sure. 855-839-1210. This was something very under the radar, but it's something that I think we have talked about on this show specifically a ton. And every time there's an update, like to pass that along. This, according to InsideRadio.com, the AM radio bill cleared the House hurdle by a wide margin. This occurred late last week, where the House Energy and Commerce Committee voted 45-2 in favor of AM radio. It's called the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act. And this is great news for those of us that do this for a living, or it's our livelihood, for all of you that consume it. And, you know, for all of you out there that still rely on AM radio when, you know, the S hits the fan, so to speak. And you look right now, hurricane, tropical storm, whatever in Florida right now. Like, you know, when your internet crashes, when you've got no service, you know, on your Verizon or AT&T phone, what's there at the end of the day? Good old reliable AM radio. And I think we've kind of talked about it from both sides. You know, the safety aspect for those in disaster areas or rural America. And then also, what's the initiative and what's the goal about squelching free speech and hearing the other side of the political spectrum, which is where talk radio really thrives, and that's obviously on the AM dial. And, you know, you've seen over the years, and not to get, like, too deep into the weeds with the industry, but, you know, whether when you look at the spoken word format, and you talk about talk, whether that's sports talk, whether that's news, traffic, and weather, like our sister station KYW, which now has an FM signal as well, not that I want one, and 1210 WPHT, which gives you the political talk on the right-hand side of the aisle. You know, we've seen this migration away from AM into the, like, that, remember like back in the day when HD radio was first created? Still obviously a thing. You can still listen to us on HD radio. And then those talk stations migrated to FM. And then, you know, well, it's no longer about FM. It's about apps and streaming and on demand and podcasts. To me, like, I'm still one of those, and I know we kind of make jokes here, like I'm 40 going on 80, but there's still something I really enjoy about physically holding a story that I'm reading, as opposed to reading it off my phone.
Yes, we know.
I know.
Yes, we know.
Yeah, the printer.
We've had 9 million producers in through here because nobody can stand printing out your stupid stories every day.
You guys, somebody might try to assassinate me pretty soon. You know, I like to hold my newspaper. I don't have digital subscriptions. I like the feel, and there's still something very cozy and comfortable to me about AM radio. My wife hates it. She can't sit and listen to any talk. AM or FM, by the way. No.
My wife's the same way.
She's like, if it's not music and it's a commercial, she's literally that person that can't wait to tap the button to go to something else because she just can't tolerate it. So this is a huge win. I know Ed Markey, Ted Cruz, a lot of bipartisan support for this.
I was just going to say that. You know what brings everybody together? AM radio, both left and right. Mm-hmm. 45 to 2. What have you ever seen, you know, that has garnered that much bipartisan support?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nothing. It's shocking to me, actually.
But the truth is the safety issue that AM radio is crucial during any kind of a weather crisis. When you think about farmers, when you think about rural communities, mm-hmm. when everything goes out, when your cell goes out, when all the HD blah 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 stuff goes out,
yep.
you can still get AM radio mm-hmm. and get those emergency. That's why we air those, even though it's annoying. This is our message from the emergency broadcast system. But truthfully,
yep.
sometimes AM radio is all you've got to get that important information out.
To save your life.
Yes.
Right? And speaking of bipartisan support, Earl Buddy Carter, Republican from Georgia, amongst the many supporters, quote, the removal of AM radio in vehicles could be detrimental to the many rural districts across America. On the other side, Frank Pallone, a Democrat from New Jersey, for those of us who have experienced a natural disaster like Superstorm Sandy, we know that AM radio is an important lifeline when other forms of mass communication go out. It's an important bill that I believe will keep Americans safe. Quote, when the power grid fails, cell towers go silent, and internet connectivity wavers, AM radio remains a steadfast lifeline to connect Americans to emergency communications. You can actually read the full article on InsideRadio.com. It does go into the weeds a little bit about what are the specific details with manufacturers, how many vehicles are made per manufacturer, how many years they would try to tie this up or give you a pass and then it would expire.
Look, I'm not for government stepping in and making it a fair playing field. You know, that's not government's job. But I will say this, that I believe, because, you know, I'm a capitalist, and I believe that the marketplace decides if you are successful or not. If you're not successful, you go away. All I want is an even playing field. You know what I mean? Because I do believe that this station, and it's being proven true, can be successful and is successful. And if people want it and crave it that much, they'll find it. You know what I mean? Like, whether it's YouTube, whether it's the Odyssey app, whatever it is, you know, I just want a level playing field. Mm-hmm. That's all I want. I want to, you know, we have so many hands tied behind our back anyway. You know, it's not a fair foot. I just want to be on the same playing field as the FM sports stations and music stations and everything like that, because I do think we can compete with the best of them.
Well, we're doing that on AM as it is.
We're proving that we can.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's just, I don't love government stepping in. I'm very libertarian with that. But I do think that we deserve to be on a level playing field. And by the way, if we're on a level playing field and the audience is like, nope, this is not for me, then we'll go away.
Yeah.
But so far, that's not happened.
Trust me, when you're not producing in radio, you go away.
Oh, yeah.
Quick, fast, and in a hurry.
Oh, yeah.
Gone. Zilch. Out. Yeah. You're not alone with government interference and not wanting that. Republican Rep. John James from Michigan stated that he is not on board with the big three automakers, and he made a passionate argument against what he sees as government overreach into how private business operates. Keep in mind, this is a Republican who doesn't want the government to say AM radio needs to be around. He says over 98% of new cars today already come with AM radio, argued James, who said it would take 30 years for most cars on the road to be without AM receivers in the dashboard if they were phased out of every new vehicle today. He says, quote, we are creating an unfunded, unnecessary mandate for a problem that doesn't exist.
Yep.
I don't understand that because
I don't either.
BMW had said they phased them out. They claim that it's electromagnetic interference or something.
Right.
The battery, whatever. So some car makers like BMW had already released statements saying they've already phased it out. They're not offering AM radio in their vehicle.
I'm going to get on the phone with Piazza today and see what's going on there. Hey, Beamer, we got to talk about this.
I just want, you know, to kind of emphasize your point. You know, everybody has seen news stories on who may or may not be our boss here, who owns this company. But especially this day and age, if we weren't profitable and we weren't producing results, you think they're keeping us around?
No.
Hell no, they're not.
They wouldn't have purchased us in the first place.
So that's why I'm saying it's the listeners and the advertisers are so vitally important to what we do. Because as long as you're here and as long as the advertisers are here, we'll be here forever.
Yes.
So you know, whether we're here, whether we're there, I love all the people that are commenting that say, hey, you know, I still listen to you on an old time AM radio. I think
awesome.
That's great. We just got numbers for August where, you know, we're over a quarter of a million listeners just on the Odyssey app for them. By the way, guys, another good month for the month of August. I mean, it is just, I mean, we're the second highest cumed station in Philadelphia for the month of August. I mean, like, people will find us. It's just, we just need an even playing field. That's all I'm saying. I don't want government stepping in.
Yep.
I just want the marketplace to be able to decide whether we're here or whether we're not.
I'm going to walk into that sales meeting at 10 o'clock today with my chest really puffed out now. And by the way, for all the people that say, to what you were alluding to and all the social media doom and gloom, 1210's in trouble, here's the message for that.
Can we stop getting our news from Twitter?
Because it's not true. 855-839-1210.
Profits, Trump ideology.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
Yep. Put up or shut up. And that's the mantra in radio. And we're putting up. We got to put up with the cut sheet because that's on the other side. But it's always good to put up with because there's all sorts of good audio gems where we kind of just riff and react on the fly. What does Stocker have lined up for a Tuesday? You find out next.
We're really getting farther and farther away.
Sooner or later, the cut sheet will now be like an 8:05 feature.
Oh, my God.
Damn these clocks. Back after this.
It's Kale and Company on demand. From Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Time for the cut sheet.
What's on the cut sheet?
What's on the cut sheet on this Tuesday? Sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo. Enjoy back to school savings on a 36-month lease on a 2024 front-wheel drive S60 for $369 per month. Down payment, registration fee, and taxes due at inception. Cherry Hill Volvo, where relationships matter. Starting with cut five here, Phil. So this I pulled from TikTok, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt, if you will. But we are hearing a lot of reports about this. So this woman claims that Kamala Harris campaign is paying non-citizens $700 per week to attend rallies and protest. And she heard about this from somebody in South Philadelphia.
Oh.
This woman claims she's getting paid $700 a week to go wherever Kamala Harris's campaign tells them to go.
Wow. They're getting paid better than radio producers.
So, let's
go to the tape.
Let's go to the tape and hear what this woman has to say. Cut five, Phil, go.
So I just left my nail salon. And my nail tech, I've been going there for 15 years.
Can we pause this real quick?
Yeah.
Can we pause this? Stocker?
Wood.
Agreed. Yeah. Dawn?
No.
I continue.
What? Dawn, just smack him. Will you? She hates,
sin.
She hates being on the show with us.
This gal looks very Trumpian. Doesn't that look like somebody that would work for Trump in the campaign?
A blonde,
beautiful, yeah, the whole bit.
I gotta say, I'm not the biggest fan of the like white hair. You know what I mean? Like I like, you know, blonde hair. I'm
it's like Khaleesi, Game of Thrones.
But yeah, it's just like don't like
yeah.
Let it be a little natural there, sweetie.
Yeah, more like Greg's. All right, we'll continue.
No, I do not highlight my hair.
No, yours is natural.
I'm going to start cut five over, Phil, one more time. Cut five, go.
So I just left my nail salon, and my nail tech, I've been going there for 15 years, so they're like family to me. But they said that their one cousin is in South Philly, and listen to this. She's getting paid $700 a week to go to wherever Kamala's campaign tells them to go to. So it's $100 a day, $700 a week. And she's not even a citizen. She can't vote, but she wants that extra money. So that's why she's doing it. So their campaign is getting a bunch of people. That's why you see these people on the side of the roads with signs or whatever, going to these protests. They get travel paid for and everything.
Wow.
And they're not even able to vote. So they're just standing there with signs for no reason for $100 a day.
Yeah.
I can't. I had to share with you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing. Yeah, no idea if that's true or not, although we had people that were brought to New York City that were illegal immigrants that were given $500 a night hotel rooms.
Well, so we have seen videos of buses come. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean they're being bussed in from.
And I've refrained from commenting on that on social media because I don't know the context of the buses. But ultimately, my whole thing when it comes to rallies has been, it's just not an indicator for election success. So whether Trump gets 100,000 or if 13 people show up to see Kamala, I feel like it's a social media dunk on the opposition moment that I don't know that necessarily resonates in elections. But would it surprise me that they're paying people? No. You know what Kamala Harris is? She's the social media candidate what she is. She doesn't really exist in real life. She's just kind of like this social media internet phenomenon where it's like, hey, if like Hillary said, if you want to know about her policies, they're on their website. She won't talk about them in person, but you could go to her website to get them. And she'll always be in a controlled environment. It's a very artificial campaign, but I wouldn't rule it out. No way to verify one way or the other, at least in my view. But would I be surprised? No, I would not. Because I don't think, other than white liberal women, I don't think Kamala has a major fan base. And the white liberal women like her because they hate Trump. And that's where it stems from.
Stephanie Ruhle was on with from MSNBC, was on with Bill Maher over the weekend. And to your point, Nick, about how everybody's making excuses about how she doesn't have to do interviews and she has policy and stuff like that, she basically said that we don't need a substantiated answer from Kamala Harris because we know who Trump is. Mm-hmm. So, again, not about her.
Nope.
We said this yesterday. It's not about her. It's against him.
Mm-hmm.
Cut one, Phil, go.
Yes or no?
And let's say you don't like her answer. Are you going to vote for Donald Trump?
No, I'm not.
Kamala
I just
Harris
said I'm not going to vote for her.
Is not running for perfect.
No,
she's running against Trump. We have two choices. And so there are some things you might not know her answer to. And in 2024, unlike 2016 for a lot of the American people, we know exactly what Trump will do, who he is, and the kind of threat he is to democracy.
I don't know.
So it's unclear to me how there could be an informed.
The problem that a lot of people have with Kamala is we don't know her answer to anything, okay?
But you know and his I think answer I, to everything.
That's, and that's why I would never vote for him, and people shouldn't vote for him. But people also are expected to have some idea
of what the program is of the person you're supposed to vote for. You're just not supposed to say, well, you have to vote for Y because X is this, that, and the other. Let's find out a little bit more. And I don't think it's a lot to ask her to sit down for a real interview as opposed to a puff piece in which she describes, like, her feelings of growing up in Oakland with nice lawns.
Then I would just say to that, when you move to Nirvana, give me your real estate broker's number and I'll be your next door neighbor. We don't live there.
So a couple of things. I'm completely over debates and I'm over interviews. I don't want Kamala Harris doing a sit down interview that's taped, edited, trimmed down, possibly given. What I want is a press conference. I want her to roll up to a podium in front of a hot mic with the Deuce Man, Jackie Heinrich, media, whether it's left wing, right wing. I don't care where you, I don't care who's got a credential. And I want her to sit up there for 60 to 90 minutes and just point. You, Bob from the Detroit Free Press. Go ahead, Bob. What do you got for me? Let her do what we do on talk radio. You can call in. I have no idea what you're going to talk about. Half the time, what's on my screen is wrong anyway, so what the hell's the difference? And she could not be in a setting where she gets peppered with fastballs. She would melt like a snow cone in Phoenix. Don't know where I found the snow cone in Phoenix. But
by the way, works. I mean, she's saying the quiet part out loud.
Yes.
Is that it's not about, like, she doesn't have to say anything. She doesn't have to do anything. It's all against him.
It's the pivot if strategy after... In 2016, they tried to, like, you know, Hillary, remember when Hillary was ranting and raving last week on her book tour about, oh, I had policy for days. I talked about policy. They lost on policy. So 4 years later, when they're hiding Joe in the basement, and 8 years later, when they're trotting out his failed sidekick, it's a total strategy. It's a different strategy. It's not about what we can offer or what our policy is. It's about painting him as the boogeyman. And that's their belief that they can win on that.
By the way, streaming live on YouTube, youtube.com/@1210WPHD. Everybody watching right now, please hit the like button. Please hit the like button, the thumbs up button. It's free. Hit the thumbs up button right now. I see you. Hit the thumbs up button. Also hit the subscribe button if you have not done so. Yeah, here's a montage put together of all the Kamala Harris allies, including the one we just played with Stephanie Ruhle, defending the lack of press conference and interviews. We've played a lot of these, but you can hear really the depth of everything in this little montage. Here, cut nine, Phil, go.
Both the vice president and Governor Walz, they have shown that they are happy warriors. They are able to answer tough questions, and they are eager to get back into the debate.
He does not have to do it, Kara. I'm going to just cut to the chase. In fact, she's put out policies on her campaign website. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's truly interested can go and read about them.
She's done interviews, and I know that we would love, or you would love, to see her sit down every single day with CNN and do interviews, but she's a very busy person.
Busy.
Harris is not running for perfect. She's running against Trump. We have two choices, and so there are some things you might not know her answer to.
There you go.
Well, how about that, by the way? As soon as you hear Hillary open up her mouth, everybody just kind of gasps, right? Like, it's like, here we go with this lady again. You're like, just get out of the news cycle already. But she's like, if you're really interested, the condescending nature and tone of, well, if you really care about something as trivial as policy, it's on the website. Go get it for yourself. Like, what? Well, if you really care about your interest rate for the mortgage you're trying to buy, it's on the website, sir. Go look it up. No, it's kind of a pivotal deciding factor as to what I'm going to do here before I make a decision. Like, all of a sudden, policy's optional.
But they're all defending. These are all the surrogates defending the fact that this is an individual who, without much of a process, was basically crowned. That's what this was. It was like a dictator. Mm-hmm. They're going to crown this individual. You're running for president. Ta-da!
Yeah.
And not holding any semblance of an actual traditional news conference where news people, where journalists, citizens can ask you questions openly and it's not scripted.
Yes.
So we had the ones that were on tape, that were edited, but that's not enough. And the fact that these people who are self-proclaimed journalists, they're not journalists, would defend that and say, when those are the same people that if it's a Republican who hasn't held a news conference in, what, 66 days since announcing, they'd be hell to pay.
Don, you just made maybe the point of the week on the show. You talked about how Kamala Harris was just elevated and anointed. That's what they're accusing Trump of potentially doing if he wins again, where there will never be another election. Trump will just pass the baton off to a family member, and they'll reside and rule over the entire world for the next 70 years. Everything that they accuse Trump of doing, weaponized government, threat to democracy, they themselves commit. Like, again, keep in mind, at this moment in time, I guess maybe that's not true anymore because early voting is underway. Kamala Harris has never received a vote for anything, ever, on the national political stage. And she just gets hand. And you heard Trump at his rally in North Carolina on Saturday. He goes, "I'm no fan of Joe's, but he did get 95% and 14 million votes." And they just kicked him to the curb for Kamala.
Yeah, and then when somebody does open themselves up to questions, like J.D. Vance at every rally takes questions, even though all they ask about is, what about North Carolina? What about the lieutenant governor? At question after question after question. And so the media just, if you want to call the system rigged, look at the media, which is supposed to be independent,
yep,
which is written into our Constitution, right, that we have these fact checkers that are supposed to create this level of balance and information. That's, in my humble opinion, I mean, I know it's my wheelhouse and my background as far as news reporting, but I feel like that's a threat to democracy that we don't talk about enough. The incredible bias in the media that is allegedly, they call themselves journalists and mainstream. We know they're not. We see you.
Yep. MSNBC, you talk about the power of the press and the media, and, you know, a lot of people don't consume the media the way they used to, but they're still powerful, and this illustrates it perfectly. According to MSNBC, in January, Kamala Harris's approval rating was 28%. At the beginning of the summer, it was 32%. Today, it is almost nearly 50%. So ask yourself, what has changed? It's the media that's carrying her to the finish line.
Trump was in Western Pennsylvania yesterday. He stopped by a grocery store. Did you guys see this?
I did.
He stopped by a grocery store. There are quick clips. Phil, if you want to run cut 11, where he says that there's a big display of Utz potato chips and popcorn, and he grabs one of the Utz bags of popcorn. This is cut 11, Phil, go.
Oh, look, I got to get some.
Look at the big bag.
Yeah, the big bag.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
My mom just got a bag of that, actually.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, good.
She says it's the best.
Is that the best?
She says it's the best.
If it is, I'll be sending. I'll be in Washington, D.C., hopefully in the Oval Office. I'll send for popcorn.
No Doritos there, no staged photo ops with Dougie and Kamala at the convenience store. By the way, the bagged popcorn pre-made, super underrated.
Dude.
Phenomenal.
I'm going to say something that everybody's going to roll their eyes at. Popcorn, the best snack.
Hard to disagree. Yeah, I can't argue that. Okay. I would actually say my popcorn power rankings, the bagged one like Trump grabbed.
Yep.
Along with, obviously, movie theater popcorn, or anytime you can get the popcorn out of that machine. The worst popcorn is the one you put in the microwave with the little flat bags.
Agreed.
Ugh.
Agreed.
Ugh.
I'm also going to say something. Can I say femme? Is that... Am I allowed to say that?
You got to turn around. You got to ask Dawn.
I don't like really, really salty or buttery popcorn. Like, I just like the taste of just a little salt. So, like, this...
You like kettle corn?
No. It's too sweet. The Skinny Pop. See, I'm giving up my man card.
You're a Skinny Pop guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Black pepper and salt.
Black pepper?
Oh, yeah.
I love the black pepper.
It's great, right?
So good.
Thank you, Dawn.
You ever put garlic powder on popcorn?
No.
No.
I like butter and salt. I want all of it. Kill me. Let's go.
Dawn, in another life, you and I would have been good together.
I know. It's true. But we are good together.
Trump also gave a woman $100 for groceries. A woman of three. A mother of three. Cut 12, Phil, go.
Here, it's going to go down a little bit. It just went down $100.
Thank you so much.
We'll do that for you from the White House, all right?
Thank you.
All right, bye. Nice seeing you, everybody. Beautiful.
There you go. He just walks into a grocery store.
Yep. Perfecto.
He walks into a grocery store and hands some woman $100.
See, that's the unstaged, unscripted stuff that makes Trump Trump that Kamala can't do. Like, it's just, and it, that's not awkward. That's just him being himself. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a photo op, I get the politics behind it, but the delivery is just natural. Yeah. Whereas everything else seems contrived and forced with everybody else. Like DeSantis. Mm-hmm. By the way, we got to play that DeSantis clip again that I played in the Big Take, and I need Jimmy Kelly. I need you to isolate DeSantis saying the word duty.
Can you play that again? Because you're right, dude.
Did you notice that
when he was playing that, or when he was saying that? All I could think about is, first of all, the mustard thing just ruins it. Just ruins him.
Yeah. Mustard.
But the way he speaks is just so cringe.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not talking about the way he governs, because I know a lot of people, you know, like,
right.
But I'm just talking about the way he speaks. It's right. No wonder.
Like, he couldn't go in and buy a bag of popcorn and do what Trump just did.
There's zero chance he could do
that. And that's why he's not the nominee to some extent today.
Phil, can you play that if you have it handy? I don't know if you hand it, if you do.
He says,
dude. The answer is no, they're not being cooperative. Yes, I am concerned. I mean, for example, we were rebuffed, our investigators were rebuffed just going to the fence line. Outside of Trump International Golf Club in West Palm Beach. And so I think they've taken the position, you know, they don't want the state of Florida to be involved in this. But here's the thing. There were multiple violations of Florida law across multiple jurisdictions. We think at least three judicial circuits, this guy, Ryan Routh, committed potential violations of Florida law. So we have a duty to investigate this. We have a duty to bring the appropriate charges. And we also have a duty to inform the public about how this works.
Now imagine DeSantis with a dog. Hey, buddy boy, you got to go and take a duty. Honey, the baby took a duty in her diaper.
Oh, God.
Like, I'm trying to be serious during the Big Take, and I'm hearing DeSantis say duty, and I'm just so dying to crack.
I've corrupted you, Kale. I'm sorry, man.
No, it's just,
I'm sorry.
I was corrupted long before I got
okay,
here.
All right. That makes me feel
that's
better.
My family.
That makes me feel better. Okay. But yes, we need that isolated. Jim Kelly, get to work on that, please.
Duty.
Donald Trump had a press conference, I guess it was, in Western PA, where he talked about the John Deere moving their business to Mexico and what he's going to do if that happens. This is cut 8. Phil, go.
I just noticed behind me John Deere tractors. I know a lot about John Deere. I love the company. But as you know, they've announced a few days ago that they're going to move a lot of their manufacturing business to Mexico. I'm just notifying John Deere right now. If you do that, we're putting a 200% tariff on everything that you want to sell into the United States, so that if I win, John Deere is going to be paying a 200%. They haven't started it yet. Maybe they haven't even made the final decision yet, but I think they have. John Deere is going to, and anybody else that does this, because it's hurting our farmers, it's hurting our manufacturing. And if you do that, you're going to have a 200% tariff put on the product that you make in Mexico, right across the border. They think they're going to make product cheaper in Mexico and then sell it in for the same price as they did before, make a lot of money by getting rid of our labor and our jobs, and really a great name, because John Deere is a great name. I buy a lot of John Deere, tremendous. I'm one of their big customers. I buy a lot of John Deere product as a private person. But if they're going to do that, we're going to put a 200% tariff on everything that they want to send back into the United States, which means one of two things. Our country's going to make a lot of money, or they're not going to build, they're not going to open, and or they're going to sell it to another country. They're entitled to do that. If they want to build in the country, in the United States, there's no tariff. You can go ahead and you can build in any one of the 50 states. You can go ahead. But if they don't want to do that, we're going to put a 200% tariff on John Deere. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to announce very shortly, if they think I'm going to win, or if I do win, they're going to announce that they're not going to build in Mexico. They're going to have to pay a tremendous tariff, which means two things. They're not going to build the plant, if it's not too late. They're not going to build the plant. This country is going to make a lot of money. or they're going to build the plant, but they're going to build it in the United States somewhere, and ideally a place like Michigan or South Carolina, where we have a lot of auto business. But we're not going to let that happen. But John Deere has got to understand that if they build in Mexico, if they start closing plants, in this case it was in Iowa, they're going to close a big plant and a couple of them. And that's just the beginning. The problem is that's just the beginning. Then all of a sudden you'll hear in a year from now they're going to do another one. All of a sudden they're not going to be in the country anymore. They're going to have to pay a very big price to be able to sell that product.
So how long before Kamala Harris and Tim Walz copycat Trump on tariffs, especially with like companies like John Deere?
I got to say something, guys. Tariffs are not the solution here.
He does love the tariff.
It's going to that. Yeah, he can slap a tariff on them and they'll pay the government. But that cost is just going to be put back on the consumer. Well, John Deere is not going to take a loss. They're going to say, okay, you want to slap us with a 200% tariff? Right. We're going to increase our riding mowers by X amount of dollars.
But I my question is, and I have to look into this, that actually the time that we were at the White House, Greg, was when they worked on the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, yeah. USMCA. And I thought that USMCA included the fact that if you had production in Canada or Mexico, you would have a lower cost. So how does that play into this? I mean, obviously he's trying to pressure John Deere, but yeah. To my understanding, I thought they already had those layoffs, like 100, 600 plus people laid off, and I guess there's another wave.
Yeah.
So how does he incentivize these companies to stay here?
Yeah.
But I believe that I'll have to look into what that means with the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and how that plays into this.
John Deere was also in the news about a month ago where they've axed all their DEI initiatives in light of a couple of boycotts. So Trump purchases John Deere stuff, obviously, from a construction standpoint or maybe even maintaining his golf properties. And Dawn Stensland's been known to drive a John Deere around cutting her grass.
Do you have a John Deere?
I don't have a John Deere.
Imagine Dawn driving one of those little ones where you sit in it and the little yellow and the green one. Yeah. She's out there going in reverse, mowing her yard.
I did have it for years. I had a John Deere. I have other John Deere equipment, not the riding mower.
The small town in Pennsylvania, it's like 21 miles, I think, south of Pittsburgh, Charleroi, Pennsylvania, is in the news a lot lately because they are experiencing, and I'm bringing this home because of what we discussed for the last week and a half, 2 weeks or whatever, that is happening in Springfield, Ohio, what was being looked by They're Eating Our Dogs and Cats is the fact that there is this influx of Haitian migrants that are coming into this town. Apparently that's also happening in this town of Charleroi, Pennsylvania. And nobody really knows where they came from, how they got there. They're being bussed around, according to this little report here. If you could play... I guess I have to play this. This is cut 7, Phil. This is cut 7. You have to watch this video where you can see a lot of these, the residents that are upset. And you could also see, like, in the middle of the night, like, these buses just come and vans pick up these people, take them to the jobs. And nobody knows where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. This is cut 7. Phil, go.
America doesn't need this place, doesn't care about this place. It's just, it's a place that time forgot.
Yeah, this used to be just a nice blue-collar, middle-of-nowhere town.
Can I stop it for a second? There's a lot of similarities. Oh, Nick, there's a lot of similarities here between this town and the town we grew up in. But there's a lot of similarities here to these towns, Springfield, Ohio being one of them, too, as... You know, they used to be thriving blue-collar towns.
Yeah, these rural rust belts.
The jobs kind of left.
Yep.
So did the population.
Mm-hmm.
So what it seems to me is that the government, the elected officials there, don't want their population to decrease, so they're bringing in people.
Well, we've
to do the jobs that the residents won't do there, right?
I mean, the people that are still in these towns are the lifers. The ones that feel like they've been left behind. Trump has talked about nobody being left behind. And we've heard, as far as population and replenishing districts, We heard the lady from New York. We've played it many times on the show. I forget what her name is, but she's saying from a redistricting purpose, she needs more people, right? Yeah. So this is all by design.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. We keep going.
In the early 80s, the steel industry started to collapse. The place became less useful for people. The population left in droves.
There's been immigrants coming in, slowly over the past 20 years right. or so. It has never been an issue.
Yeah.
It's never been an issue at all. And now it really has become one. For the past 2 or 3 years, it's just been a huge flood. And almost all Haitian.
Now that these core businesses are gone, the excuse for bringing them in here was, we can't get anybody to do these jobs, which I always was suspicious of. I always suspected somebody wanted some cheap labor.
Having vans pick them up to go to wherever they are going to and then returning them at all hours of the night.
Do you have any idea where they're coming from?
No.
It's all coordinated. No way around it not being coordinated at this point.
If I'm in Haiti and I live there and somebody spreads out a map of the United States of America in front of me, the odds of me landing on Charleroi, Pennsylvania is zero. So whoever is responsible for putting them here, that is an act of negligence.
Okay, that's a van coming out. And there's another one coming right here. I see this one.
So there you go. This looks like a documentary that's coming out soon. I'm
and of
not
course,
sure
if you
putting it out, but,
if you point that out, well, hate has no home here. You're racist. You're this, that, the other thing. So my counter to that is, especially when you talk about them being brought in the middle of the night, whether it's on planes or then via vans and buses, if what you are doing is so righteous and humane, why are you doing it in such a shady way? Because I've always thought if you're doing something perfectly legit on the up and up, you do it in broad daylight, you do it here, you do it there, you do whatever, because you're on the right side of whatever, right? You're on the side of good. But if the Biden administration and Democrats that are trying to repopulate their districts and get cheap labor to boot are doing this in the middle of the night where they're flying planes to Logan International in Boston and other big cities, and then from there they get on buses and they get on minivans, these little shuttle type vans. Why is it done in such a clandestine fashion?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think you have to be brilliant to figure that out.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to see. And I'm glad that towns like this are being put in the spotlight for these issues, because you're right. It is a town that in non-election year, nobody would give a crap about.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And you also have to wonder how this impacts those swing states. I mean, this is happening, what'd you say, 20 miles south of Pittsburgh?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
But one of the issues, as you read about Charleroi, is that it's all about the economy. So they had a lot of jobs to fill.
Yep.
And the complaint by residents there is that companies don't want to pay the full price.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to unions. Yeah, you talked about your what is the inflatable rat outside, you know, the allegation by unions. And so that's what the people of Charleroi, many of them smelling a rat and saying, you know what? There are many folks coming in here who are immigrants, who are great people. There are others who are just taking our jobs because they're willing to take a lower wage.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes to the heart of union workers or just Americans who want a fair wage.
Yeah, and think about how the media and the Democrats spin this then. Trump says, if elected, I will, you know, implement the largest deportation effort in American history. And that automatically gets labeled as hateful, anti-immigrant, racist, when all it is wanting to have the Americans be taken care of first, which should be like your obligation as the president. Make it about your country and your residents and your citizens and your voters first, and then everybody else. And secondly, it's not anti-immigrant. It's just go about it the right way.
Yep.
Yeah, and we saw this, you know, for example, even in Ohio and here in Pennsylvania, the question is during tough times, and these are, you know, economically, with interest rates as high as they are, some people buying their groceries on a credit card, which is at a 25 to 30% interest rate. And so people looking around saying, wait a minute, you know, we have people from other countries who are being, and granted, you know, the situation is in Haiti and other communist, you know, regimes and other countries. Do these people, do we want to bring in folks? Is that something we as America, as Americans stand for? Yes, we do. But during tough times, I think a lot of Americans are saying, hey, what about me? You know, I can't get the benefits. I can't get, you know, I've heard here in Philadelphia, the Title VIII, the some of the housing or some of the benefits, and they feel like, wait a minute, how come somebody from another country, granted they're in a horrible situation and they're even brought here under a legal status, but how come?
Yeah.
How come they're being put before me as an American? I'm the one suffering. I can't get the help, and they're getting gift cards and all these benefits and medical benefits. How is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
This is cut four here, Phil. These are black undecided voters in Georgia. This poll, I believe, was conducted by the Daily Mail. James Johnson asking about the economy and all that stuff under Trump versus under Biden-Harris. Cut four, Phil, go.
Hand up if you think the economy is better under Trump. And hands up if you think the economy is better under Biden-Harris. Okay, 7-1. That's pretty clear.
The truth. I'm not saying he's like, of course, yeah, like I dare say, he has best. He still has a business mindset. I think that lended somewhat. And I think, yes, the trickle-down of whatever previous stuff. And I think he just handles certain things a little better.
Who does?
Trump.
Liz?
He provided more jobs, more opportunities, stimulus. Even though he didn't have any experience in politics, but he came in and did a much better job. If you look at the statistics now, we're far more worse now than we were before.
Firstly, I just want to ask a general question about Harris, then we're going to show some clips of the debate. What's your biggest hesitation about voting for Kamala Harris?
Just, is she going to be able to do the things that she says she's going to be able to do? That's, you know what I mean? Just, is she going to be able to do it? That's my biggest hesitation. Is she going to be able to get it past Congress? You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Yep. You know.
Mikhail, how about you?
Everything that glitters ain't gold.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Very, it looks great on paper. But I'm not sure it could translate to politics and if she'll even be able to get it past.
Hey, what?
My thing is her strength. That's my focus for her. You know, is she going to be able to take a punch and give one or two back? You know, that's my biggest thing. And it has nothing to do with her gender, ladies, okay? But you have, we're talking about the highest office in the land.
Yeah. If it was Michelle Obama, I would. You feel totally different.
Yeah, You can't be weak and hold that off.
Yeah, like if you put her next to Michelle Obama, it's like...
Or Hillary Clinton.
Or Hillary Clinton, it's like it's no comparison on the strength that I think Michelle Obama or Hillary Clinton would have against her. They would eat her up.
How did Harris come across then? How did she do up against him? Hayward says that, you know, big personality. How did she do? How did she come across?
She kept saying that she's a warrior, she's going to fight, but I don't know if you're a strong ass. I mean, I get it what you feel, but I don't think you are as, like, a warrior, like, fighter, like she says she is.
Right.
That's just my opinion. Not that I don't think she doesn't care, and...
Yeah.
So just a couple of takeaways from some of the highlights there. I like the fact that she, the lady in the middle, top, the third to the right, said that Trump ran the country like a businessman. I think you've started to see a lot more people that when you talk about Trump from an economic standpoint, ran the country like a business as opposed to a politician. Also, I think they're very accurate when they say, even though I think Kamala did better at the debate than most people have, I've kind of been on the minority end of the spectrum on the performance. She is a lightweight compared to Hillary and Michelle. Like, you know, we know Hillary lost. I believe if Michelle was going to run, she would win. But you put Kamala, Michelle, and Hillary with three podiums, you can quickly spot out that Kamala would be the lightweight. But my question is, because seven of those individuals there, black male and female voters in Georgia, chose Trump, and there was one guy that chose Kamala for the economy. But does that mean you're going to vote for him?
That's
my question.
It's a great question.
Because I think most people, even though the polls now starting to show that, you know, especially in Pennsylvania, Kamala's gaining confidence and traction with voters on the economy, which, as I said yesterday, I don't believe that. That's got to be a statistical polling outlier, because I don't know how anybody can arrive at that conclusion. But are you going to pull the trigger on Trump? You can tell me until the cows come home that you know he's better on the economy. And by the way, too, this is not known versus unknown. This is known versus known. Kamala's known. We know where she stands on the issues. We've got 5 years of tape. Regardless of whether or not she wants to talk about it, we have the tape. And she's been the number two for the last 3.5 years. So she's complicit in this last administration.
Apparently, Doug Emhoff was on one of the morning shows yesterday saying that, well, she didn't really control policy. She was vice president.
Mm-hmm.
She's taking a pull out of the Hubert Humphrey playbook from 1968, where he was basically like, "This I'm just vice president. I don't decide anything.
Okay.
I go to ribbon cuttings. Okay. I don't know what you're talking about."
Okay.
Harry Enten on CNN broke down the New York Times Siena poll that we talked about yesterday, Nick, Dawn. And really highlighted the fact that Kamala Harris losing support from Latino and Black voters in at least Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina. This is cut 10. Phil, go.
How about this? I think this is really interesting. All right, choice for president, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina. All right, Hispanic voters. 4 years ago, Joe Biden won that vote 66% in the Sun Belt. Look at where we are now. Kamala Harris at just 52%. So Kamala Harris struggling among Hispanic voters. Donald Trump doing considerably better than he did 4 years ago. How about Black voters? Kamala Harris, again, leading here by a significant margin, right? She's getting 83% of that vote, but that is significantly short of Joe Biden's 92%. So the bottom line is, in the Sun Belt, which is much more diverse than the northern battleground states up in the Great Lakes, Kamala Harris is struggling among voters of color, Jake.
So let's just take that number, a 9% drop, and apply. Now, just because 9% aren't there doesn't mean that 9% automatically go to Trump. But if they do, and if my forecast, the heck with Harry Enten, I do deep dive quantitative research.
Okay, there you go.
I mean, if my 17-18% support for Trump from the Black community is accurate, well, you throw in 6% of that 9% that's gone. Now we're at 22-23%, Greg Stocker.
Uh-oh.
Could be the difference.
Could be the difference.
Could be the deciding factor. As Harry Enten would say, oh my goodness gracious, look at this data.
Yep.
By the way, is he not the biggest? He makes Kornacki look like a stud.
I mean, all of these data guys are, that's what
they
do.
I like Enten. No, I like playing this. He's got some good stuff.
They do.
Yeah.
The big matchup between Alabama and Georgia is this weekend, right?
That's right.
Tuscaloosa.
That's right, buddy.
And the Alabama coach, Kalen
DeBoer,
was asked about former President Trump attending this weekend's game.
Because that's really imperative to his preparation to beat Georgia.
And this is what he had to say. Cut six, Phil, go.
Yeah, with former President Trump said to be at this game or planning to be at this game, what are your thoughts on that and just the impact or what it speaks to about the impact of this game?
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of celebrity-type people here, people that want to come be a part of, what's happening on game day. It's going to be, everyone's watching, and so, be great to have everyone who wants to come watch be here. And, for us, I told the guys this with game day and everything coming here as well. For the guys to try to take as much off of their plate, other than maybe a few extra interviews towards the end of the week. Just the main thing is that they get prepared to play the best football game that they've played this year. Or, I always challenge them to play the best football game they've ever played in their career. And so that's what matters when it comes down to what we can control. And it is kind of cool that we have a lot of people who want to come be a part of the atmosphere and add to the excitement energy that the game will bring.
So Trump actually attended the Georgia-Alabama game 6 years ago when he was in office. It was a pretty cool moment, certainly a deafening reaction when they were playing in Atlanta in the old Georgia Dome. I love how he says celebrity types that want to come, and then at the end he says people that want to come for the big... He didn't even say Trump by name, But that's, you could tell that, and that's a sports question that's being asked from a sports reporter. You just know that that guy was looking for some sort of soundbite, right?
Yeah.
And that coach, Kalen DeBoer, gave him nothing. Like that was a political non-answer right there.
By the way, what's the line for this weekend, Nick?
Georgia's a 2-point favorite.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's a 7:45 kickoff Saturday night. I'll be gassed by one. They're my own tailgate party. My living room.
Phil, I have this clip here. So Kamala Harris is not attending the Al Smith dinner.
Yeah.
And the Al Smith dinner, just to explain it,
yep,
is known as a situation where candidates who run against each other. So it was famous with Trump and Hillary back in the day.
God, yep. You remember that one line that he dropped with the pardon?
Yep. Yes. Which said, pardon me. So it's famous for candidates and, you know, the media to come together, have a laugh, and have a lighter moment to show, you know, American unity and how laughter basically...
This is perfect for her.
Right?
So she does... She's not attending. This is the first time a presidential candidate has not attended since 1984. There was that year again.
I'll tell you, there's a lot of 1984.
See?
Sean Farris is... reading a book.
Walter Mondale turned down the invitation in 1984. Cardinal Dolan responded to this. This is what he said about that.
We're disappointed. We were looking forward to giving the vice president an enthusiastic welcome. And we were confident that she would find this. You know, she speaks very much about the high ideals and how it's good to get away from division and come together in unity and all. That's what the Al Smith dinner is all about. We haven't given up yet. We're not used to this. We don't know how to handle it. This hasn't happened in 40 years since Walter Mondale turned down the invitation. And remember, he lost 49 out of 50 states. I don't want us to... So we're not used to this, and we're not giving up. You know who's been a help to us, Lauren, is Senator Schumer and Governor Hochul. They both are working hard to see that they convince her to come.
So there's still a chance.
Yeah, and Senator Schumer said to me, I don't think she made the decision. I think her schedulers are saying she can't make it. So we're not giving up. We hope she's there.
Oh, she's busy. She's the VP, and she's running for office.
She has Air Force Two.
Yeah.
Can't they, like, if she's in, I don't know, let's just say Cleveland, Ohio, can't she make the flight back?
Yeah, in like 12 minutes.
They would literally, if she asked them to, they would close down the flight path for her.
And I went back and I watched that clip of Trump where he he dropped the one-liner of the pardon joke. And even Hillary Clinton in that moment laughed.
Yeah.
This is a light, like Dawn said, a lighthearted, you make jokes, self-deprecating. But you know what it tells me? Either she is not confident enough to ad-lib, or her handlers won't let her out for that.
What's interesting to me is that it's a Memorial Foundation dinner.
Yep.
It's a Catholic nonprofit that raises millions of dollars for vulnerable women and children in New York specifically. But the question is, you know, why wouldn't she go to this? It raises money. It's for a very good cause. By the way, it's still going to happen October 17th. It's sold out. So what do they do here? Will they have Trump? Because he's invited. Yep. So will he still go? And then who else will be invited?
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I really think it's they don't want her exposed in any of these uncontrolled settings.
Do you think that's what it is? I can't think of any other reason why she wouldn't go to this.
That has to be it. That's why she's only done Oprah, she's done Dana Bash, and she's done the ABC News. That's why she's never done... She has still yet to do a press conference.
But even... I hear what you're saying, Nick, but even that, this is not... a press conference. Like, she's just there, you know what I mean? Like, she gives a speech, she can take a little dig at Trump, Trump will take a little dig at her, and all in, you know, good spirit, everybody leaves happy. I just don't understand why she wouldn't.
A lot of people believe the more she opens her mouth, the more her numbers go down.
A couple of things. First of all, you know, she's not good in these live...
Yeah.
Experiences. She's not good. She's uncomfortable. She's awkward. She can't help herself. She does that cackle laugh that she has that I think is a nervous laugh. And so she is not good in this kind of a venue. But I will also say this. She's saying that Trump is a danger to democracy in Project 2025, which is a lie. It's a total lie. I don't know how. It's so frustrating to me that they're allowed to put commercials on that are just 100% a lie. Mm-hmm. So the fact that she is claiming all of this, that he's a danger to democracy, then how does she with a straight face go out on a campaign trail when she just the night before went to this dinner with 900 people in the audience, all dressed up and gussied up, and they're all laughing together and unified? Yeah. I think that she doesn't want to give him any legitimacy.
You know, I'm going to bring up a story when I was doing sports in Nashville with a guy. I did a three-man morning show with a former football player, former Tennessee Titan, and another radio guy. And he could not stop talking on the air in a three-person format. Like, he was just a blabbermouth. But he was good at it. And then when we would go to commercial, he would just keep talking nonstop. And it was like one of these things where eventually I was like, dude, we just went like 27 straight minutes. Like, can I just like refresh here for a moment? Let me towel off. And he told me that his anxiety, in a social setting, he hates silence when he's around other people. Like, it drives him insane. So he has to create conversation.
Interesting.
I think with Kamala, there's this anxiety, this, I don't want to call it lack of, I mean, because she's been a public figure her whole life, right? Like, she was a prosecutor in courtrooms. But, like, I don't think she's good in the unscripted. Like, if you're telling me she's got to give an opening statement as a prosecutor or cross-examine a defendant on trial or even in a debate setting, even though she's not great. But, like, when she doesn't have an agenda to go off of and it's just, hey, you do you, you be you, be a social butterfly, I don't think she can do that. And I think that's why you will not see her in these settings.
Hmm.
Like, even with the cooking stuff that we saw. Remember what she was doing with the cooking with the different wines? And the nervous laugh was there as well.
That's true.
Like, I'm not trying to stereotype, but you would think that, like, a woman would be comfortable in the kitchen, right? She looked like a fish out of water.
I'm not trying to stereotype, but, you know, but, you broads.
But,
you chicks.
Done.
I'm comfortable
in the kitchen. Get in the kitchen, will you?
I love the kitchen. I know my way around a kitchen like a champ.
I don't know. I don't know if she is. I don't, to be honest, not all. Look at Zioli. He's, you know what I mean? Like, to your point.
He claims men are actually better chefs than women are.
So,
which, in some regards, yeah, I agree.
But I don't think that that's her thing. I think that as a, I think that she, you know, grew up with it mostly because the parents divorced and single mom who was working and a professor, high level professor. They traveled. I don't get the sense that she's somebody who's ever spent a lot of time. And I'm being serious.
With the common folk.
I'm being serious here. In the kitchen or cooking. So, you know, to your point about that. But the other point is, I think that she is not comfortable in these settings because of, and think about what you just showed with Trump walking into a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he grabs those Hers potato chips, he wants to eat. He's lost weight,
and which is amazing.
Melania's not looking. He would love to chomp down that bag of Hers,
And let's be real about this. When's the last time Trump went grocery shopping for himself?
Yeah,
probably never in his life.
Yeah.
And he still looks more natural doing it than the other Tom, Dick, and Harry's out there.
Because he would really love that. And so there's an authentic, you can't fake it. There's some things in life you can't. I think for her, because of maybe her background or how, you know, she grew up, whatever that is, whatever that looks like, I think she's not comfortable in being herself.
Well, you know what it is?
She's so manufactured.
I'm going to give you a bipartisan. She's the same as DeSantis. DeSantis is awful. Remember when DeSantis was at the bar and he was bartending and slinging beers with his little tight jeans and his boots on? That did not look natural at all.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris and Ron DeSantis have a people problem.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have people skills.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the back. Trump has people skills to the umpteenth degree.
I mean, going into that grocery store yesterday and just handing that woman $100 to pay for a grocery.
You can't make that up.
You can. And it is just like,
in the moment,
that's the type of stuff. Mm-hmm. He should honestly just go to grocery stores. Honestly, I'm being dead serious here at 8:46 in the morning. Like, just go all around Pennsylvania to every grocery store.
Every swing state, too.
Every swing state. And just make talk to people. Just talk to people. No, I don't mean that. I mean, just talk to people. Yeah. Be like, hey, look at the price of this. Hey, look at that. That would be so impactful.
I know.
It would be so impactful.
It really would. It really would. Maybe he should open up his own grocery store chain.
Imagine he just walks in and hands out hundreds to people.
Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, go show up at the Aldi in Montgomery County.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go to the Dollar General in Willow Grove there.
Yep.
And you know, I'm serious.
Yeah. Like,
That is such a great moment. That is way more impactful than rallies or fundraisers or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. You're actually physically talking to people who are like, Jesus, what is the cost of this? Oh, my God. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You're right. I think part of this, though, is that Kamala Harris, she and her campaign are specifically avoiding going to places where somebody's going to shout out a question.
Yep.
Because she is so manufactured. And she knows that what she really believes, and we know what she believes because she not so long ago ran for president. Her own party did not pick her because she's so far left and so far progressive. Now she's claiming that her policies are more in the middle, but they're not. And so that's why she doesn't want to answer any question from anybody or have to reveal what she really believes in.
She's an installed puppet reading from a script. That's all it is.
Yep.
I mean, she's Ron Burgundy.
Yep. All right. We're way over.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get started until 56.
No, we're
so
still way over.
Yeah, we are. All right. We'll come back. I'll breathe into the microphone for 7 seconds. We'll take another break, and then we'll get back on track. Dawn's Big Three to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. And then also a couple of stories on COVID, including the ex-New York City COVID czar.
Uh-oh.
Who was fired from his job after engaging in drug-fueled sex parties at the height of the pandemic.
Freak-offs?
No freak-offs and
okay,
no ditty.
Okay, good.
Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. And we'll give that to you on the other side.
Wait.
What else we got?
No, I said can't wait.
Oh, okay. I thought you were teeing up Dawn for a read. Okay.
Well, I am.
Okay.
I am doing that.
Dawn, take it away.
Yeah, because we got to talk about the first full week of fall, thinking about leaves changing, maybe a fall road trip. Everybody's back out on the roads right now, whether it's back to work, back to school. But my friends at Piazza Premium Automobiles, they're going to help you find that luxury vehicle you've been eyeing. You've earned it. Now go get it with a little help from my friends at Piazza. You know, they have thousands of new and certified pre-owned vehicles from brands such as Mercedes-Benz, Land Rover, Jaguar, Maserati, BMW, Porsche, Alfa Romeo, and more. Just visit them, piazzapremiumautomobiles.com. You can always stop by one of their many Pennsylvania, Delaware, or New Jersey dealers, PIAZZA, piazzapremiumautomobiles.com. Tell them Dawn sent you.
NFL Week 4 is here, and you can start with a chance for a big win on FanDuel, America's number one sports book. If you're new to FanDuel, you'll get started with $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. When you place your first $5 bet. Let's look to Thursday Night Football. By the way, Nick Dale and I were speaking about Georgia. It looks like Georgia's the two-point favorite against Alabama this weekend. I would lay that bet on Alabama for Saturday, 7:45. But let's look ahead to Thursday night. This Thursday Night Football, Cowboys at Giants. If you want to do a $5 bet on this, because you know you have no dog in the fight, so why not put a little money on it? How about this same game parlay? CeeDee Lamb on the over rushing yards, Dak Prescott under on the passing yards, Devin Singletary, who had a big game for the New York Giants over the weekend, on the over for rushing yards. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Greg, FanDuel.com/Greg to make every moment more of the season. FanDuel Sportsbook, the official partner of 1210 WPHD and the NFL, 21 and over, President of Pennsylvania, first online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.